Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Ritual Yoga and Energy Healing. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, welcome. I'm so happy to have you. And if you are a recurrent listener, thank you so much for being here. If you are enjoying these episodes, I would always appreciate it if you shared them with your family, with your friends, or with a loved one that you think would resonate with this conversation. So let's dive into our conversation for today. So today we are talking about the yamas, and we are going to dive into a couple of subtle ways that we can start to embody the yamas today. And so to begin, what are the yamas? So I'm going to read you a part of the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. It's part 2, verse 29. There are 8 limbs of yoga. Yama is the first, the laws of life. Niyama, the rules for living. Asana, the physical postures. Pranayama, the breathing exercises, pratyahara, the retirement of the senses, dharana, steadiness of the mind, dhyana, meditation, samadhi, the settled mind. The laws of life are 5. These are the yamas: nonviolence, truthfulness, integrity, chastity, and non-attachment. These laws are universal, unaffected by time, place, birth, or circumstance. Together, they constitute the great law of life. So, in terms of spiritual scripture, that is the birthplace of the yamas as we talk about them today. So, at the moment, not at the moment, but at this time that the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali was written, they emerged with the 8 limbs of yoga. Back in the Vedas and the Upanishads, there were only 5 limbs of yoga. So now there are 8, and this is kind of the scripture we go off of in our yoga philosophy. And so if we're going off of those 8 limbs of yoga, then the yama is the first limb. And the first limb is the laws of life. So we're going to go through each yama and explain a little bit about what it's about and how we can start to embody. We can't go into in-depth information in this episode just because it takes me a whole workshop to talk about just one of them. But we can touch on them, and you can have a little introduction as to what the yamas are about and how you can just begin to start living them. So why would you want to live them in the first place, right? What is the purpose in embodying and learning about these teachings? So the yamas, as I've just read, are the laws of life in terms of yogic living. But what if you're just a regular person who enjoys yoga, right? And the yamas are kind of like a value system. And so just as in the business world and in our contemporary life, we usually have kind of a set of core values or core beliefs or kind of a moral code of ethics of how we live our lives. And so basically the yamas and the niyamas are a code of ethics in them of itself, right? And they're values based off of a very ancient tradition. And so my intention always with teaching the yamas and niyamas is just to give a really solid foundation that has been around since time immemorial, right? So in terms of why you would want to study them and learn them, it's just a way of becoming more sattvic and becoming more yogic, right, in how we live. And so living in harmony with all beings and living in reverence for Mother Earth. And so these values are kind of, you can learn about them, and if they feel true to you and if they feel resonant for you, then you can embody them and implement them. And yet if you kind of start to learn about them and you go, these values aren't so much for me, I'm going to go with a different value system, that's okay too. It's just a really wonderful starting point if you want to start living a more intentional life. So then you can kind of take your days and maybe 1 week at a time work on each yama. And during that week, you really commit to living, for example, in nonviolence. And so you actually watch yourself during the day and you become a little bit more present, a little bit more aware of your actions. And you say, okay, how much am I passively living in violence during my days? How much presence can I bring to live in a nonviolent way, right? So it's essentially just living in a more intentional and aware and present state. So that is kind of the purpose behind practicing. And then in terms of yogic, kind of the eight limbs of yoga, it's the starting place of living a yogic life. And so if you are wanting to kind of commit your life as to a yogi's life, and you really want to embody the life of a yogi, the yamas and niyamas are where you start. And no matter how much asana or pranayama you do, if the yamas and niyamas are not your foundation, then you're kind of like a boat without a sail. So you might be making your body really strong and making your mind really strong, but if you're still treating people poorly or not following your moral code, then you're kind of, yeah, up a stream without a paddle. So the yamas to me are like an invitation. They're an invitation into a more peaceful way of living. And I find it really exciting and kind of like a challenge in terms of seeing how much I can live in alignment with these values. And so when I kind of come to a difficult decision, I can run through the yamas and niyamas and say, okay, this is the action I'm about to take. Is it nonviolent? Is it truthful? Is it in reciprocity with Mother Earth? Is it living in non-excess? Is it letting go of the things that I need to let go of? And so in kind of running through the yamas and niyamas while you make decisions and such, and just when you go about your day-to-day life, then you can actually be acting in accordance with what you actually believe or the way that you actually want to show up. So I really find the yamas as an invitation. I don't see them as this kind of like the, it says here in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, the laws of life. And that can always feel a little bit constricting, right? These are the laws that you have to abide by. Kind of like in the Catholic tradition, you've got the Ten Commandments, right? And both of those words are quite heavy in like a masculine kind of way. Right? They've got this very masculine container. And myself being a woman and a more feminine container, I like to approach the yamas in a slightly different way. You know, instead of seeing them as the laws of life that are constricting me, I see them as this kind of invitation into a peaceful way of living. And so then it's really this sweet embodiment of, oh, okay, can I let go here? If I'm getting really angry, okay, what do I need to let go of here? What do I need to be truthful to myself or others about? How can I make the nonviolent choice here? And then that becomes such like an expanding and liberating way of living. So I think you can hear how passionate I am about this. And really, it doesn't matter what moral code that you follow, just that you're living intentionally with this excitement for how aligned can you be with what you believe. And the yamas, you may or may not know that my signature program is a 20-week deep dive, right? And the first 11 weeks are committed to the yamas and niyamas. Because so many of us, when we talk about the wilderness within, so many of us have a garden within us that was planted primarily by our parents or our caregivers or by other people. And so the yamas and niyamas are this invitation to pull out the plants that you don't want in your garden and plant them with this beautiful, these beautiful values and this beautiful ethic code, shall I say. So it's a really exciting way of breaking out of limiting beliefs and opening up to the limitlessness of living in intentionality with specific values and specific morals. Because then you're that consistent person. And you know, you're that person that everyone knows. No, she practices nonviolence, so she would not hurt me. So then they can go to you with what they need from you, you know? Or they know that you live in truth. And so they know that you will never lie to them. And that makes you a really, really magnetic person. Right? People want to be around you because they know what you stand for. So I really enjoy teaching the yamas and niyamas. I actually have a complete course specifically on them, and they're the first part of my signature program. And so I find it a really wonderful way of creating this foundation, because so many of us grew up without a foundation, whether we're religious or not. If we were religious, maybe we grew up with a good foundation of moral codes, but they were a little bit limiting, right? And then maybe if we didn't grow up religious, we kind of crave that intentional ritual and moral kind of way of living. Right? We kind of want to have a little bit of a foundation on how we go about our life. So I'm tooting the horn of the yamas and niyamas. But today we're just talking about the yamas. Next week we'll talk about the niyamas. So the yamas, the first yama is nonviolence. And so nonviolence, right? When you hear that, where does your head first go? How does someone who is nonviolent look like to you? What do they speak like? How does it feel to be around them? What are their limits? What would they do, and then what would they not do? And so these are all kind of questions for exploration of what you consider someone who is nonviolent. And then stretch those parameters a little bit and have a look at what you would actually like your personal definition of nonviolence to be. Because this is going to change for everyone, right? So there's a lot of perception in what is violent and what is nonviolent. But we need to get really quiet and let all of the other voices fade away. And you need to get clear on what to you is violent and how you would like to live nonviolently. Make sure you have, make sure you do your research so that you really understand, and it's an intentional decision. So many of us are living unintentionally, right? So we, for example, we've just eaten meat since we were kids, and we've just adopted the same belief system that our parents had about meat, right? And so we've just adopted, no, eating meat is fine if I kill the animal myself. And then you can do a bit of research and you can close your eyes and you can go, okay, do I actually believe that? And if the answer is yes, then great. And if the answer is no, then great. And just adjust it based off of that. Because if we're just living unintentionally and we're just going along with kind of the fads or what everyone else is doing or what we've been told since we were young, then we're not really intentionally choosing. And instead, we might be choosing something that we actually don't align with or agree with. So really important with nonviolence to do your research, get quiet, and decide what are the parameters for you in leading a nonviolent life. And then look into all of the aspects of your personal life, right? Am I speaking kindly? Am I speaking to others violently? And then how is my relationship with the earth? Am I treating the earth kindly, or am I doing harm unto the earth? There were the Jains. The Jains were really incredible at nonviolence. That was really a big part of their mission, is to live a nonviolent life. They used to wear flaps over their mouths so that flies wouldn't fly into their mouths, or bugs wouldn't fly into their mouths while they were speaking. They would sweep the earth in front of them so that they wouldn't step on bugs or animals. They would live a very nonviolent life. You can think of Mahatma Gandhi in how he was nonviolent in his protests, right? And how he still moved mountains with his work. And yet he did not inflict violence unto others. So there's some contemplation for you in that. And the second yama is satya. So satya means truthfulness. And this one can be quite easy or it can be quite difficult. Truthfulness lies on two levels, right? The truthfulness of, am I speaking true words? And sometimes you have to stop yourself in a conversation and ask yourself, am I speaking true words? And then you have to have the courage, if those words were not true, to not allow your pride to hold you back in correcting yourself and changing your opinion or changing the way that you spoke. So are my words true? And then truthfulness lies on another level. Are you being true to your heart's desires? Are you being true to your heart's desires? So are the actions of your life in correlation with what you desire? Are you speaking your truth? Are you living your truth? Are you working a corporate job just because it pays the bills, but you would actually really prefer to be a potter, you know? So this satya, this truthfulness, is having the courage to step out of the comfort zones and to live in truth. So that's another point of contemplation for you. Are you living in truth? The third yama is asteya. And asteya means non-stealing. And for me, I like to define asteya as living in reciprocity. And so in terms of stealing, our whole modern society is built off of stealing, right? It's built off of colonialism, which was stealing land from people, or stealing culture from people, stealing lives. So there's a lot of unlearning to do in terms of a colonial society, and there's a lot of space to expand into living in reciprocity once again with people and with the earth. And so are we taking more than we're giving, or are we giving more than we're taking? Those are the two sides of the coin here. If we're taking more than we're giving in terms of profit and in terms of economics, and we place economics over the earth, and we place economics over people's well-beings. So are we placing economics over people and land? So then are we taking more than we're giving, right? Are we more concerned with the money we're earning than with how our coworkers or how our employees are faring? And then there's the flip side of the coin. Are you a mother who is giving so much to her husband, her job, her kids, that you don't have any moments to receive your own love? So that's the other side of the coin. Are you someone who goes into work and you want to give so much, but you don't receive anything from your boss? You don't receive appreciation. You don't receive a raise. You don't receive the recognition that you deserve. So that's another place to look at, right? And then there's our relationship with the earth. Are you living in reciprocity with our earth? Because our earth, this land, nature is what sustains us. And so we must sustain it. It's this reciprocity and this living, not stealing from the earth, right? For as much as we take, we give. The beautiful indigenous cultures in North America have a beautiful address. It's called the Thanksgiving Address. And it's a beautiful address because it gives thanks to every aspect of the earth. They also have I forget what it's called, but I think it's called the harvest rule. But they only take half. There's a whole actual list of what their rules are for harvesting. But you only take half, and they leave sacred tobacco as a thanks for Mother Earth. We live in reciprocity with the land. There's a beautiful study that Robin Wall Kimmerer did with one of her students where they grew two crops of sweetgrass. One was tended by the indigenous people of that land, and The other one was just ignored and left to grow on its own. And the one that was tended to by the indigenous people of the land just absolutely thrived. And then the other field that was not taken care of and was just left to live and grow wild, it didn't do so well. There were spotty patches and there were parts of it that grew, but nothing like the thriving one in which the people cared for the land. And so that's a really wonderful way to see that we can have a beautiful relationship with the land. We can give the land as much as we take, right? We can help it thrive, or we can help it, or not help it, but we can put our actions towards the degradation of Mother Earth, and then we can also begin our own demise, right? So there's this reciprocity, and which side of reciprocity do we want to be on? Do we want to be living fully in reciprocity, or do we want to be living, giving too much or taking too much? Can we find a middle ground here? Okay, so that's Asteya. Brahmacharya in the old texts was always known as chastity. Here in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, it says chastity in this translation. So, is Brahmacharya, do we have to live a life of chastity? No, not necessarily, not in today's day and age. So, if we want to embody the yamas and niyamas fully to kind of get the full experience of the yogi, then sure, we can practice chastity if that's what we desire. And I could almost even say it might be important for some of us to practice chastity, to reclaim our energy. So in terms of the yamas that I teach and that I embody and that I recommend, Brahmacharya is more like respecting your sacred energy and not living in excess. And so in terms of it meaning chastity in the old days, it meant this harnessing of your power, right? And this harnessing of that that sacred energy that we hold and that we can share with others if we desire to do so. So it's really having respect for that sacred energy. So if we are living in excess and we are overrun with, we drink too much, we smoke too much, we have too much sex, we eat too much, anything kind of too much. So the chastity, you can think of it in terms of sex, and it is in terms of sex. In terms of if we're having too much sex with too many people, then we're really spreading that sacred energy instead of containing it within. So that's kind of the sexual connotation here. But then I like to teach Brahmacharya in terms of just excess. So if it's too much of anything, then it's not good for us, right? Too much oxygen kills us. Too much water kills us, right? But those are things that we require for our survival. And so for me, I interpret that as too much sex is bad for us. But sex is still a very important part of our life. It's the way that we populate this earth. It's the way that we give life. And it's also a very important practice. If we're using it in a sacred way, in the tantric way, then it can be so powerful in heightening our spiritual awareness. So I don't take Brahmacharya as complete chastity. I take it as a respectfulness of your own sacred energy, and then scaling back. So if you're living in excess, then scaling that back and seeing, why am I eating too much? You know, what is happening within me? Is that a trauma response? Is that where does that come from? And then not holding ourselves in shame, but following that thread. If you're having so much, so many wild parties and you're drinking so much all the time, why am I doing that? What am I trying to not face? Right? So then we can follow that thread back and maybe work with a therapist or someone who is informed with trauma, and we can follow that back to potential trauma in our lives or intergenerational trauma, right? And really be so soft and gentle with ourselves while we're doing this work, but start to follow the thread. The last yama is non-attachment, aparigraha. So aparigraha is letting go. And it is releasing attachment to this physical world. And when we do so, it's not an absence of caring. I think a lot of the time, we can see non-attachment and we can see that as apathy. We can see that as, oh, so if I'm not attached to anything, then I don't care about it. And that is quite the opposite. We are essentially exploring the edges of attachment. So being attached to worldly things in the yogic philosophy creates maya. And maya is known in Sanskrit as illusion. And so this worldly attachment can create such illusion. Have you ever been so attached to a certain breakfast that you have come home to find that you don't have the ingredients and you've gotten really wildly grumpy for that day? Or just you were attached to something happening and it didn't happen quite the way that you wanted it to. That is attachment, right? That is an attachment to an outcome. And when we're living in that way, then we can get trapped in maya and we can get trapped in this illusion that we can get really grumpy and irritated and then stay stuck in that emotion without seeing this larger picture of this beautiful life that we live, this beautiful life that we've been given. So living in non-attachment is releasing attachment for things to go the way that you want them to go. So that's a big thing, right? And that, I think, non-attachment for everyone is a continual learning of their whole entire life. I don't think you can ever master non-attachment. It's this, and so it is, right? So when something happens, and so it is. So it's not being attached to the way that you wanted it to go. So then when you change the lens to something like family, a mother would have a really hard time not being attached to her child, right? And so this is where healthy attachment comes in. And this is also where that gray sliding scale comes in again. And we see, okay, what level of attachment would I like to live with? I would like to have a healthy level of attachment with my child, so that they're safe at all times, they're fed, they're nourished, they're cared for. But I don't want to be attached to the point that I live their life for them. Non-attachment, yeah, it can take a lot of different routes. We can also talk about attachment theory. So a secure attachment, that's kind of what we're going for. If we have an anxious attachment, then that's when we're really attached to people, outcomes, things. And that can be quite the trauma response and fed from our sympathetic nervous system. So that's something to recognize. There's a book called Attachments. And it's called Attached, I think. And it's really wonderful in figuring out what attachment style you are and how to kind of regulate yourself back to a healthy attachment style, a secure attachment style. Because there's also avoidant attachment styles where you push everything away and you don't get attached to anything in fear of being hurt. So it's not that. It's really so deeply understanding this world of Maya and understanding that these worldly attachments that we have can create more suffering than they're worth. And then we can kind of relax into this existence of, I am, so I am, so I am. It is, so it is, so it is. And when we can kind of lean back in that way and release our expectations and our attachments, then we can open ourselves up to a larger scope of this human existence. So that's what I'm going to leave you with for the yamas today. It's just a very short introduction, but we definitely went over the 30-minute time. So thank you very much for listening to this slightly longer episode. I can't describe to you how much the yamas have transformed my personal relationship with the world and relationship with others, relationship with myself. It's really an ongoing journey. So I don't think that we practice or embody these to perfect them. I think it's a continual journey of always trying to live in alignment with them to create more space. And then having the softness and the compassion for ourselves to be human. And as humans, we may be trying to practice nonviolence and then have a bit of an outburst, right? So we really practice, when that happens, we practice softness and we practice self-forgiveness and we practice compassion for ourselves. Because, we're human, and that's a very beautiful, messy thing. So, thank you very much for listening to this episode today. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful week. The wild in me honors the wilderness within you. Namaste.